I call this meeting of the House Preventive Health Division to order. The first item on the agenda is the roll call. Could the clerk, Mr. Gelman, please take the roll?
Chair Freiberg.
Present.
Freiberg, present. Vice Chair Bierman.
Present.
Bierman, present. Representative Grunhagen.
Present.
Grunhagen, present. Representative Acom.
Present.
Acom, present. Representative Abaje.
Present.
Abaje, present. Representative Ackland.
Present.
Ackland, present. Representative Carlson.
Present.
Carlson, present. Representative Franzen.
Franzen, present.
Franzen, present. Representative Heintzman.
Present.
Heintzman, present. Representative Morrison.
Morrison, present.
Morrison, present. Representative Pryor. Representative Pryor.
Chair, present. You. Present.
Thank you, Representative. Chair, you have a quorum.
Thank you, Mr. Gelman. Quorum is present. The next item on the agenda is the approval of the minutes from our February 16th meeting. Is there any member who would like to move approval of the minutes?
Mr. Chair, I move to approve the minutes.
Thank you, Representative Bierman. Representative Bierman has moved the minutes. Is there any discussion? Okay, seeing none, all those in favor of approving the minutes of the February 16th meeting, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails. Before we get to bills, I thought it would be helpful to get some background from the Department of Health on tobacco and nicotine cessation programs, since that is the subject of one of the bills. And we have Jen Cash, the Acting Tobacco Prevention Manager here from the Department of Health to discuss this. So welcome to the committee, Ms. Cash. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Freiberg, members of the committee. My name is Jen Cash, and I'm the Acting Program Manager of the Commercial Tobacco Prevention and Control Program at the Minnesota Department of Health. And I thank you for having me today to talk about commercial tobacco cessation programs in Minnesota. I'd like to start off by saying that smoking remains the leading cause of preventable disease, disability, and death in the United States. Smoking kills over 6,300 Minnesotans every year and costs Minnesota $3.2 billion annually in medical costs alone. Please note that when I refer to tobacco throughout this presentation, I'm referring to commercial tobacco products manufactured and sold by the tobacco industry and not the traditional or sacred tobacco used by American Indian communities for sacred purposes. On average, 13.8% of Minnesota adults currently smoke. That's about one in seven Minnesotans. We've all known someone who's struggled with this. When we look more closely at the data, we can see there are disparities in smoking rates across groups. That green line shows the statewide average, and notably, several groups smoke at higher rates, including American Indians, African and African American Minnesotans, those with less education and income, rural Minnesotans, and those with poor mental health. It is also known that for decades, tobacco products were advertised and promoted to many of these communities. Next slide, please. Promoting quitting is one of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention's four national tobacco control goals. Quitting is beneficial at any age. We know that quitting lowers the risk of death and the risk for many adverse health effects, including poor reproductive health outcomes, cardiovascular diseases, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, and cancer. FDA-approved cessation medications and counseling are cost-effective cessation strategies. According to the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, tobacco treatment is one of the most cost-effective preventive services with as much as a $2 to $3 return on every dollar invested. Next slide, please. Most people who smoke want to quit, and a majority make a quit attempt each year. Because of how addictive nicotine is, quitting is very difficult. And for most people, it takes multiple attempts. Cessation support comes in many forms and can be delivered individually or in groups, in clinical and non-clinical settings, and with or without medication. Cessation support is delivered by a variety of professionals, including physicians, dentists, nurses, pharmacists, therapists, counselors, and community health workers. Cessation support tools include prescription and over-the-counter medications, face-to-face or telephonic behavioral support, and numerous self-help tools. What is considered best practice and has the strongest evidence base is the combination of behavioral support, counseling, and medications. Using both together can more than double a person's chances of successfully quitting. The most cost-effective way to deliver best practice cessation at a population level is through Quitline services. And they exist in all 50 states and U.S. territories, typically run by state health departments. Next slide, please. Through a coordinated effort, all Minnesotans have access to free cessation support, either through their health plan or from QuitPartner. QuitPartner was launched on April 1st, 2020. The service is funded and administered by the Minnesota Department of Health. For two decades prior, Clearway Minnesota was the funder and administrator of the state's QuitLine. At that time, it was called QuitPlan Services. When QuitPartner launched, there was a seamless transition from QuitPlan Services with no service disruption. Clearway Minnesota has since sunsetted. Next slide, please. Minnesota's QuitPartner programs provide a variety of support options to help people quit. Individuals can learn about the programs and sign up online at quitpartnermn.com, or they can call 1-800-QUIT-NOW to enroll over the phone. They can get support at any time, and they can enroll up to 2 times per year. Next slide, please. QuitPartner provides over-the-counter, FDA-approved nicotine replacement therapy and other support tools to any Minnesota adult 18 and over, regardless of insurance status. The support available includes a 2-week starter kit of nicotine patches, gum, or lozenges, plus text message and email support. Callers are also connected directly to their health insurance provider's QuitLine if they are a member of a health plan that has a QuitLine. We know everyone's quit looks different, and different tools work for different people at different times. Next slide, please. Minnesotans who are uninsured or underinsured, meaning they don't have coverage for tobacco cessation programs, can sign up for the free QuitPartner coaching program. And this program includes one-on-one coaching calls, additional nicotine patches, gum, or lozenges, and a welcome package, email support, and text message support. Next slide, please. In addition to the general program I just described, QuitPartner also offers 4 specialized programs for specific populations. The Behavioral Health Program offers specialized support for those living with a substance use disorder or a mental illness. The Pregnancy Program offers specialized support for those who are pregnant or planning to be. The American Indian QuitLine offers a dedicated team of American Indian coaches who understand and respect Native cultures and traditions. And My Life, My Quit, which offers help for teens ages 13 to 17. Next slide, please. There are several ways we promote the QuitPartner programs to Minnesotans. The most cost-effective promotion tool we use is targeted digital advertising. Examples include banner ads on websites and social media posts. Other promotional tools include pharmacy bags, as you can see here, gas pump displays, and transit ads. We have also developed innovative programs and partnerships. We work with health systems so providers can electronically refer their patients to our program. We have developed continuing education training for providers. And most recently, we are developing a new community ambassadors outreach program. by meeting people where they are and offering free, non-judgmental support, we are successfully reaching Minnesotans throughout the state and connecting them to cessation services. Next slide, please. If you'd like to learn more, we have several program web pages. The addresses are here, and they all contain specific cessation information. Next slide, please. And with that, I thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you, Ms. Cash, and thank you for highlighting the distinction between commercial tobacco and traditional or sacred tobacco at the outset. I think that's something that we don't think about enough, and the terminology we use is really important. And I think when I introduced you, I might have neglected to be specific about that, particularly I think when there are, as you pointed out, significant disparities in who uses commercial tobacco and which groups use it at higher rates. I think it's very important for us to emphasize, you know, which product we are focusing on, because commercial tobacco is engineered specifically for maximum addiction potential. So appreciate that. Members, are there any questions for Ms. Cash? Representative Bierman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question. Could you elaborate a little bit on the difference, if any, or what the significance differences are between Quit Partner and what we had before Clearway, please?
Ms. Cash.
Chair Freiberg, members of the committee, the service is essentially the same, with the primary difference being that the American Indian Quit Line that is now provided has coaches that are American Indian coaches themselves. The program before did not have that. We also have a program that serves teens. Clearway Minnesota only had programming for adults, and we're in a position to be able to provide some support for teens that does not include the nicotine replacement therapy. But essentially, Quitline services are the same for most states. It's a very standardized telephone coaching program.
Representative Bierman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for that answer. One other follow-up question. Could you tell me, does Quit Partner have a sunset?
Ms. Cash.
Chair Freiberg, members of the committee, the program does not have a sunset. There is a statute for cessation services at MDH. And so that funding is comes to the general fund and is continuous.
Representative Bierman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Ms. Cash.
Any additional questions for Ms. Cash? Okay, seeing none, thank you for that information, Ms. Cash. Would you be available to stick around just for the discussion of our first bill in case any questions come up that you may be able to answer?
Yes, Chair Freiberg.
Okay, thank you. Appreciate that. So next on our agenda, we have House File 3153. This is Representative Morrison's Tobacco and Nicotine Cessation Treatment Medical Assistance Coverage Expanded. Representative Morrison, would you like to move your bill?
I would, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Thank you. So Representative Morrison moves that House File 3153 be recommended to be re-referred to the Health, Finance, and Policy Committee. Just a short note, this is largely a finance bill, but obviously there's a policy component as to whether or not medical assistance should cover cessation coverage. We want to be able to discuss that, but if it gets too much into the weeds on the cost, I may try to guide the conversation in another direction. So Representative Morrison, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate the opportunity to present House File 3153, which would ensure that Minnesotans on medical assistance and Minnesota care can access the tobacco cessation medications and treatment they need. Almost all of us know someone who has been addicted to tobacco and struggled to quit. Tobacco addiction is a chronic, relapsing condition that often requires multiple attempts to quit and repeated individualized treatment. There are 574,000 Minnesotans who still smoke and need help quitting. Nearly half of adult smokers have a household income of $35,000 or less. And those enrolled in public programs are twice as likely to smoke than the general population. We know that tobacco use is higher in rural areas, in communities of color, for people living with mental illness or substance use disorders, and those with low incomes. Minnesotans enrolled in medical assistance and Minnesota Care face barriers to tobacco cessation treatment, and coverage can change from year to year, creating confusion for both providers and patients. This bill would ensure that MA and MinCare enrollees have a comprehensive tobacco cessation benefit that includes coverage for individual, group, and phone counseling and all FDA-approved medications. People respond differently to different interventions, so coverage for a range of counseling types and medications is essential. A comprehensive cessation benefit does not include barriers to accessing services like cost sharing, prior authorization, or quantity limits. Our public programs currently cover some FDA-approved medications and individual group counseling without cost sharing, but we need to make sure these enrollees have a comprehensive tobacco benefit that includes all FDA-approved medications and all three forms of counseling with no barriers, like prior authorization and quantity limits. The Affordable Care Act and federal regulation require tobacco cessation medications to be available without cost sharing and prior authorization requirements, but some MA and MinCare enrollees face limited, inconsistent access to these medications. This bill would also allow more providers trained in tobacco treatment counseling to be reimbursed. Added providers include mental health specialists and alcohol and drug counselors, ensuring patients can see their trusted provider for tobacco treatment. This will not only support our healthcare workers, but improve patient access to trained tobacco treatment counseling. There is significant evidence that access is a prohibitive barrier for MA enrollees. This bill is about supporting Minnesotans who want to quit tobacco, ensuring they face as few barriers as possible to quitting a highly addictive product. It would support our providers by making sure they're reimbursed for providing tobacco counseling, allowing patients to get their tobacco treatment from the provider they trust, and in setting and in the setting that they are most comfortable with. So with that, there are several testifiers, Mr. Chair, so I will turn the floor over.
Thank you, Representative Morrison. I do have five people who have signed up to testify to this bill, so I would just ask that they keep their discussion to or their comments to 2 to 3 minutes, and then we will turn to member questions following the testimony. So first on the list, I have Emily Myatt from Minnesotans for a Smoke-Free Generation. Welcome to the committee. Ms. Myatt, please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name's Emily Myatt, and I'm the Government Relations Director for the American Cancer Society Cancer Action Network and Tri-Chair for Minnesotans for a Smoke-Free Generation, a coalition of more than 50 organizations who share a common goal of advancing justice by striving towards a future where every person is free from the harms of commercial tobacco and can reach their full health potential. And House File 3153 meets that goal. It would support Minnesotans on Medicaid and Minnesota Care who use commercial tobacco and want to quit. This bill would encourage coverage of all FDA-approved medications and all three forms of best practice counseling, including phone, individual, and group. And it would make sure that that coverage is barrier-free. Quitting tobacco is hard. Medicaid and Minnesota Care shouldn't make it even harder. All Minnesotans pay the price for tobacco's harms. Commercial tobacco use remains the leading cause of preventable death and disease. Smoking takes the lives of more than 6,300 Minnesotans every year, and those deaths are preventable. These deaths, smoking costs the state more than $7 billion a year. And in Minnesota's medical assistance program alone, smoking-related healthcare costs total $563 million annually. But our state can do something about that. Tobacco use interventions are the gold standard in public health for cost effectiveness. A study done by the American Lung Association and Penn State University found a 26% return on investment for states that invest in tobacco cessation treatment. Tobacco cessation help costs just a fraction of what it takes to treat tobacco-related diseases like lung cancer and cardiovascular disease. For people who use tobacco products, having access to things like counseling and tobacco cessation medications can double the chances of quitting successfully. While medical assistance in Minnesota Care provides coverage for some guidelines-based tobacco cessation treatment and medications, coverage for nicotine replacement therapies and phone counseling varies. Barriers like prior authorization, limits on treatment duration and quantity limits exist and can change year over year. Research shows that enrollees are more likely to quit successfully if Medicaid coverage does not impose any of those barriers to care. The U.S. Departments of Labor, Treasury, and the Health and Human Services issued additional guidance on the Affordable Care Act that reiterates that Medicaid expansion coverage should not include cost sharing for tobacco cessation medication treatments, and that plans should not require prior authorization on any of those treatments. This bill would codify the existing practice of no cost sharing, but would also remove prior authorization and other barriers, ensuring consistent coverage for all Medicaid and Minnesota care enrollees. This policy is also about health equity. Medicaid serves communities that continue to use tobacco at higher rates, including people with limited incomes, folks in greater Minnesota, individuals living with mental health or substance use disorders, and communities of color. And we know that these communities have been targeted by the tobacco industry to lure them into addiction. This bill would make sure our Medicaid enrollees have all of the support they need to quit, that they can see their trusted provider trained to provide these services, and that telehealth can be a tool to use when appropriate. Finally, we want to thank Representative Morrison for her leadership on this issue, and we look forward to continuing to work with our partners at DHS and MDH on language and implementation. On behalf of Minnesotans for a Smoke-Free Generation, thank you for considering this important policy. We hope we can count on your support.
Thank you, Ms. Myatt. Next on the list, I have Pat McCone. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Chair Freiberg and committee members. My name is Pat McCone, and I'm here representing the Lung Mind Alliance. It's a statewide coalition facilitated by the American Lung Association. The goal of the alliance is to reduce the disparities related to the impact of commercial tobacco on people with mental illness and/or substance use disorders. The tobacco control community indeed has worked for decades to implement best practices, including smoke-free air and quit lines. And we've made great strides in reducing the use of commercial tobacco in the general population. However, for people living with mental illness or substance use disorders who are more dependent on tobacco, smoke more heavily, the results are not the same. And they are more likely to die from tobacco-related illness than from their mental health or substance use condition. I'll say that again. They are more likely to die from tobacco-related illness than from their mental health or substance use conditions. I'm here to say we can do better. Mental health and substance use disorder professionals have the skills and, as importantly, the relationships to effectively provide tobacco education and counseling in the context of delivering other behavior health services in the whole person approach to treatment. The current system prohibits mental health providers, mental health practitioners, mental health professionals, peer specialists, alcohol and drug counselors, recovery peers, and community health workers, the very trusted, skilled professionals already serving this important population, from being allowed to bill for reimbursement for delivering these services that are within their scope of practice. The common sense changes proposed in 3153 are the changes I'm here to support on behalf of the Lung Mind Alliance. Gone are the days, hopefully gone are the days, when treatment for tobacco use was literally no treatment, encouraging those dealing with depression, anxiety, or alcohol abuse not to jeopardize their sobriety or mental health by quitting smoking, as it was often phrased as the least of their problems. But we know better now. Research has shown that receiving tobacco treatment concurrent with mental health and substance use treatment results in better mental health, less depression, anxiety, stress, and an increased sense of well-being, and results in a 25% increased chance of long-term sobriety. The current limitation on reimbursement to bill as a physician or physician extender is an outgrown practice, reminiscent of the fact that tobacco addiction used to be treated only within primary care settings. House File 3153 recognizes the effectiveness and the efficiency of treating tobacco addiction with mental health and addiction within mental health and addiction settings. And it addresses the need for the payment model that recognizes these providers. Naturally, adding more provider types that can be reimbursed will increase access and sustainability by expanding services in rural Minnesota and among those disparity populations. House File 3153 also helps assure that all FDA-approved medications used in tobacco treatment would be available to people without barriers, increasing their utilization, sustaining their quit attempt, and allowing for continuity of use and access when people move between levels of care or care setting. In short, House File 3153 supports integrated care, increases access to care, addresses health equity, and supports improved recovery. On behalf of the Lung Mind Alliance, I urge your support for this important upgrade for nicotine dependency treatment. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. McCone. Next on the agenda is Sue Abderholden from NAMI. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. Sue Abderholden, Executive Director of NAMI Minnesota. And we strongly support House File 3153, which would expand medical assistance coverage for tobacco and nicotine cessation treatment. People with serious mental illnesses have high rates of smoking. People with mental illnesses smoke at 2 to 4 times the rate of the general population and consume about 40% of the cigarettes sold in the U.S., smoking 2 or more packs per month than people without a mental illness. So not only do more people with a serious mental illness smoke, but they smoke more. It was long believed that smoking would actually reduce symptoms, especially those related to schizophrenia. But actually, smoking requires a higher level of medications and thus higher side effects. Many mental health professionals in the past didn't want to even broach the subject of quitting smoking because their clients already had so much on their plate. But that has changed in the past several years, as there is greater recognition that people with mental illnesses who smoke die up to 15 years earlier than people without mental illnesses who do not smoke. People with mental illnesses are 4 times more likely to die prematurely if they smoke cigarettes. As you've heard, heart disease, cancer, and lung disease are the leading cause of death for people with mental illnesses. It's so important that we make sure that people with mental illnesses on Medicaid can access the cessation programs that will actually help them quit, and that these programs are delivered by people that they are already connected to, mental health practitioners, professionals, and peer specialists. Not many people with a serious mental illness actually have a primary care physician. The list of things that the commissioner cannot do under this bill is also important because it often takes more tries, greater combination of methods, higher levels of medication to help people with mental illnesses quit. Eliminating co-payments for cessation will also eliminate a barrier to access. Again, I urge your support for this bill so that we can help people with mental illnesses quit smoking and improve their lives. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Abderholden. Next on the list, I have Dr. Kavita Prasad. Welcome to the committee, Dr. Prasad. Please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, thank you for having me here today. My name is Dr. Kavita Prasad, and I am the medical director of primary care and the integrated health clinic at Sunbrow Valley Health Center, which is a non-for-profit organization providing mental health and substance use disorder and community-based services to approximately 4,500 patients across 7 counties in southeast Minnesota. I am here today to testify in support of HF 3153, the legislation to remove barriers to tobacco treatment, medication, and counseling, and to ensure that more trained providers can be reimbursed adequately for providing counseling services. As a little bit of background, I started my medical career in England, where I trained as a physician, then at the NIH and at Mayo Clinic in Rochester, where I worked for over 10 years. I always saw the disparity in healthcare between the rich and the poor. And in 2019, I started working at Sunbrow Valley Health Center to try and bridge that gap and provide quality care to the underserved population. Most of my patients have a mental health or substance use disorder. More than 80% of my patients smoke. I can clearly see that tobacco is taking a huge toll on this population, with both worsening their physical and mental health. This group has clearly been left behind. We do need more interventions, services, and providers in place for tobacco cessation initiatives. You have already heard that this population dies 25 years younger than the average adult, and this is from tobacco use and the complications from tobacco use. Patients that I speak to tell me that they smoke to reduce their stress, anxiety, improve their mood, yet we know that tobacco cessation efforts help improve mental health. The education is just not in place in substance use facilities. We also know that as substance use, people are less likely to relapse on substance use if we can have tobacco cessation services in place. 80% of my patients are state insured. Reimbursement for services is incredibly poor. We receive $12 as reimbursement for a consultation for up to 10 minutes, $27 for anything greater than 10 minutes. I know the number of patients who are smoking. We take records of that annually in our facility. For an agency to be sustainable, to take the time to train staff, to have staff available for groups, one-on-one counseling and support services with providers that patients trust will help us prevent patients relapsing on tobacco use. Right now, with such low reimbursement, it's hard to justify from a cost standpoint to our leadership to provide a great deal of focus on tobacco cessation, even though I know it's a leading factor of mortality for my patients. As has been mentioned, it takes about 6 quit attempts for people to be successful. Usually only 2 quit attempts are covered by some insurance plans. This limits counseling. Some patients need more counseling. We've already touched upon the pre-authorization. We're seeing that as a problem around providing nicotine replacement therapy, the inhaler, the gum, the spray. There's pre-authorization required, which would benefit us greatly if that was removed. So I hope you can see that the current reimbursement model is creating barriers for patients and providers. And through providing adequate reimbursement to train and educate staff, this bill will impact what we are able to accomplish for this population that has been left behind for way too long. If there is an opportunity to speak individually with any of you on the Preventative Health Committee to talk more about preventative health for this population, I would love that opportunity. But for today, please vote yes on HF 3153. And thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony, Dr. Prasad, and for your work with this group of patients. Next and the last testifier I have on the list is Jane Welter Noland. Welcome to the committee, Ms. Welter Noland. Please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Jane Welter Noland, and I'm the Director of Community Relations at Mental Health Resources. We're a nonprofit organization that offers community-based mental health and substance use disorder services to adults recovering from serious mental illness. I'm here today to testify in support of House File 3153 and share some reasons why this bill will help the individuals my organization serves. Tobacco and nicotine addiction is a chronic, relapsing condition that often requires multiple attempts to quit and repeated individualized treatment. As a provider of mental health and substance use disorder services for people with serious and persistent mental illness, we are committed to helping our clients improve their overall health, including tobacco cessation. 60% of the people that we serve use tobacco, and the majority of our clients get their coverage through MA and Minnesota Care. Currently, the limited number of healthcare providers that can provide and bill for tobacco treatment by Medicaid and Minnesota Care creates a significant barrier to the people that we work with. We currently have mental health practitioners, mental health professionals, certified peer specialists, licensed alcohol and drug counselors, and recovery peers who are not able to provide tobacco treatment services and be reimbursed for these through Medicaid and Minnesota Care. These providers have the training and the skills to address tobacco use, and it fits their scope of practice. It's important that the people that we serve are able to receive tobacco treatment from the providers that they know and trust. It does not make sense that our substance use disorder providers, for example, can provide treatment for any other substance and get reimbursed for it, but are not able to provide and get reimbursed for tobacco cessation, counseling, and education. When people receiving tobacco treatment in the context of their mental health care, their depression, anxiety, stress, and feelings of well-being improve. For our substance use disorder treatment clients, not only is continued tobacco use a risk for relapse, but they have a 25% greater chance of long-term abstinence and recovery from alcohol and other drugs if they are also able to stop using tobacco. By providing tobacco treatment to our clients, we're providing them a better opportunity for success in their recovery. The proposed legislation would expand who can provide and bill for tobacco treatment cessation services. This would increase access to this type of care for more individuals. Tobacco dependence is an addiction that should be addressed as part of the recovery-based mental health treatment and whole person care. Please support House File 3153. Thank you so much.
Thank you for your testimony, Ms. Welter-Nolan. That concludes the testifiers for this bill. Is there any member discussion? Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just want to thank the testifiers for their information and Representative Morrison for her concern about addiction. Just a little side note, I got addicted to tobacco when I was in the Marine Corps. And it was very difficult for me to quit. And the Lord willing, I was able to do so down the road. I do have a couple of questions about this bill. Number one is, you know, other Medicaid services, if I'm or medical assistance services, have a $3 copay to it. And I wonder, and a lot of those are just as important as this is, I believe. Also, they're already paying a premium for Minnesota Care, at least some premium, and they have copays on their Medicaid services. To me, by having a copay, you know, you put a little bit of skin into the game, at least showing an indicator, you know. And I'll just use, before I put the question to Representative Morrison, I've had relatives who've been members of AA, and I've gone to sessions with some of them to try to help. And one of the things that has come out clear is that you have to have a strong desire to stop the abuse of alcohol before they can really help you. If you don't want to be helped, or you have a mild commitment to stopping, it usually doesn't work. So I personally think a little bit of skin in the game, even for these low income people, which they currently have anyway, shows that they at least have a fairly strong commitment to wanting to stop. And so I was just wondering with Representative Morrison why she eliminated any type of copay for people who choose to participate in this.
Representative Morrison, would you like to take this or have a testifier respond?
I might do both, Mr. Chair, if that's okay. Thank you, Representative Grunhagen, for sharing your story. And it's wonderful to know that you were able to leave tobacco behind. And in some ways, I think your story reflects how the diverse experience that people have in trying to quit tobacco, because everyone's journey with it is a little bit different. But there is a lot of evidence that it takes multiple times to quit. So this is an incredibly addictive substance. We currently don't have copays, so this codifies it, is my understanding. And so I think part of the point of this bill is to remove barriers so that everyone can have access to tobacco cessation treatment and medications. And as the testifiers, who I thought were just incredible, and I'm sure taught all of us something today, pointed out, this is an investment that we will all benefit from, because the more people that we can help to quit tobacco, the healthier our state will be. So I might defer to Ms. Myatt, perhaps, to finish off your question. Thank you.
Ms. Myatt.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative Gruenhagen, agree with everything Representative Morrison said, but would just also reiterate that federal law does say that for folks on Medicaid expansion, there shouldn't be cost sharing on these barriers, and that's been an additional guidance. So we're just following federal law that way. And like Representative Morrison said, we're just codifying existing practices of what's happening right now.
Representative Gruenhagen.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Hey, thanks for those responses. I did support raising the age from 18 up to 21 for tobacco. I understand I have a strong concern about addictions. I did 13 years of jail ministry and a lot of addictions there, let me tell you. But I still would, when the government provides free things, completely free, two things I've observed happen, not always and not by everybody, but I've observed, number one, usually abuse sets in. Well, this is free, the government's paying for it, so you tend to have abuse. And I could give a couple examples. The other thing that tends to happen, the price of those products tend to go up because government's paying for everything free without any participation of skin in the game by anybody else. So the providers of those products increase the prices. And so those are my concerns about this bill, and I would appreciate if Representative Morrison would think that through a little bit and see if we can't work something out that would be more amenable to my concerns in those particular areas. Last question, I know I've gone on a little bit. Thanks for your indulgence, Mr. Chair. Do we have any empirical evidence where something like this was implemented in the surrounding states or in the 50 states, and where they seen it, they saw a dramatic reduction in the number of people in the income brackets that we're talking about quitting smoking? If anybody could answer that question.
I see Ms. Myatt raising her hand. Ms. Myatt.
Mr. Chair, Representative Gruenhagen, I'd be happy to follow up and send you a few studies that have come out. I think the Department of Health talked about the Surgeon General's report that shows that these are proven best practices that result in folks quitting, but then also result in preventing diseases like cancer, heart disease, COPD. We also know that there are 14 states in the country that have a comprehensive benefit, so cover all FDA-approved medications, all phone counseling, individual and group counseling. So I'd be happy to send you data from those states and a couple of other studies that kind of bolster our case for why we know this works and will help folks quit. And again, like you talked about, Representative Gruenhagen, it's not a one-size-fits-all approach for tobacco cessation. It takes multiple quit attempts because, like you said, this is an addiction. So making sure we're removing barriers to folks so that when they're ready to quit and they find that right combination of counseling and medications, they have everything available to them to quit a highly addictive product.
Thank you, Ms. Myatt. Representative Heintzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm wondering if Representative Morrison could, or maybe one of her testifiers, walk us through the difference between what we currently offer in Minnesota and highlight specifically the cost that this could potentially create and what. And that might not be something that's necessarily relevant to the big picture, but it's important to at least know what we anticipate that this would potentially look like in a fiscal note.
Thank you. We are not a finance committee, but I think certainly highlighting the distinction between what we currently do and what this would do, I think would be helpful. So Representative Morrison, looks like you've unmuted yourself.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Heintzman. Those are great questions. And I think several of the testifiers, I'd love to have them reiterate the return on investment that this investment into our state could provide. I believe this is a long-term savings situation. But I'll let Ms. Myatt walk through the details of what we cover now and what this bill would add. Thanks.
Ms. Myatt?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative Heitzman, medical assistance in Minnesota care currently covers the NRT patch, gum, and lozenge, along with two other types of medications. And coverage does vary for the inhaler and the nasal spray. As we heard from one of the testifiers earlier, that coverage is inconsistent and can be a really helpful tool of the inhaler and nasal spray for folks with mental illness, especially folks with experiencing schizophrenia. We also know that the state currently does cover individual and group counseling, but it does not require coverage for phone counseling. And so this would just make sure that coverage is consistent across all plans with MCOs fee-for-service, that it's all FDA-approved medications, so removing the barriers that we're seeing on two of those nicotine replacement therapies, and then also adding phone counseling to the mix in addition to individual and group counseling.
Thank you, Ms. Maya. Wasn't there also a comment from a testifier about how some plans cover only two counseling sessions, but it can take up to six for it to be successful?
Quite right, Chair Freiberg. There are limits on the number of attempts a person can have in a year. And so this bill would remove those attempts, recognizing, like you just said, folks require more than two often.
Thank you.
And then as it relates to the return on investment and kind of the cost, I can't speak to cost. DHS might be able to better dig into that and later on in committee, but we do know that it is a return on investment for our state. I think MDH earlier talked about there's $3 that come back to the state in cost savings by investing in these types of programs. There is the study that I referenced from the Lung Association that says it's a 26% return on investment as well. And that's because we're preventing things like cancer, COPD, those things that we know that are really costly. You know, lung cancer can be around $68,000 a year, depending on the type of lung cancer you have. So NRT therapies, counseling are certainly going to be less than treating a stage four lung cancer.
Thank you, Ms. Myatt. Representative Heintzman, any follow-up?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. What is the path for this? When would we be able to get some more information beyond a policy committee?
The motion is to refer it to the Health, Finance, and Policy Committee. Fiscal note that is necessitated by this bill would be presented in that committee as well as all the costs.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Has a fiscal note been requested?
Representative Morrison, do you know the answer to that?
Mr. Chair and Representative Heintzman, I believe that we've requested it, but we will be soon if we have not yet. We don't have it yet.
Okay. Representative Heintzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've heard Representative Morrison say on virtually every question I've asked, I believe it'd be really nice if we could have more information that is something that would be an actual takeaway so we could confirm one way or another on each of these issues. So if that information is forthcoming in the next stop, be helpful, I think, for those members and for those of us tracking the bill. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Heintzman. Yes, all financial issues will be thoroughly vetted by the Health, Finance, and Policy Committee where this bill has been moved to be referred to. No additional members have their hands raised, so any closing remarks, Representative Morrison?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members, for the opportunity to present this bill. I really want to thank the testifiers for their unbelievably compelling testimony. I'm really proud and excited to carry this bill. This could be a tremendous investment in the future of the health of our people and our state. And I urge everyone to support it. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Morrison. Representative Morrison renews her motion that House File 3153 be recommended to be re-referred to the Health, Finance, and Policy Committee. With that, the clerk will take the roll.
Chair Freiberg.
Yes.
Freiberg, aye. Vice Chair Bierman.
Yes.
Bierman, aye. Representative Grunhagen.
No.
Grunhagen, nay. Representative Akam.
Akam, aye.
Akam, aye. Representative Abaje.
Aye.
Abaje, aye. Representative Ackland.
Ackland, aye.
Ackland, aye. Representative Carlson.
Carlson, aye.
Carlson, aye. Representative Franzen.
Franzen, aye.
Franzen, aye. Representative Heintzman.
No.
Heintzman, no. Representative Morrison.
Morrison, aye.
Morrison, aye. Representative Pryor.
Aye.
Pryor, aye. Chair, you have 9 ayes and 2 nays.
Okay, there being 9 ayes and 2 nays, the motion prevails and House File 3153 is recommended to be re-referred to the Health, Finance, and Policy Committee. Thank you, Representative Morrison, and thank you to all the testifiers.
Thank you.
Next on the agenda is House File 1806. Representative Lippert is here. He's not a member of the committee, so I will make the motions. I move that House File 1806 be recommended to be re-referred to the Health, Finance, and Policy Committee. Representative Lippert, there is also an A1 amendment. Would you like me to move that at this point?
Yes, please, Mr. Chair.
Okay. This is just to put the bill in the shape you'd like, or is that correct?
Yes, just a technical correction.
Okay. So I move the A1 amendment to get the bill in the shape the author would like to consider. Is there any discussion? Okay. All those in favor, please say aye.
Chair.
Aye. Okay. I'll call Representative Heintzman.
Yeah. Sorry, Mr. Chair. That was a little quick. I was just checking to see what was the timeline on the amendment coming in.
I haven't looked at that, but I'm guessing if you're asking, Representative Heintzman, you might have some information about it.
The amendment,
Mr. Brown.
The amendment was received before deadline and it was posted to the website. I was a little slow at sharing it with the GOP researcher on the committee.
Okay, Representative Heintzman?
That's all I needed. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. All right. So seeing no further discussion, all those in favor of adopting the A1 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay. Motion prevails. The bill is in the shape you'd requested, Representative Lippert. To your bill, Representative Lippert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 1806 seeks to ensure that Minnesotans who rely on private wells for their drinking water have safe and clean water to drink. Residents of cities and those connected to rural water supplies benefit from systems that are in place that provide safe drinking water. If you live outside the reach of a municipal water system or rural water system and rely on a private well for your water supply, you're basically on your own. We know there are contamination concerns in rural areas with nitrate from agricultural runoff, arsenic, and other contaminants, but we really don't know the extent of contamination in private wells because we don't have a strong testing program in place. If wells are tested and contamination is found, cost for addressing the contamination can be an obstacle too. This bill puts a significant testing program in place while also providing resources for remediation for addressing contamination. This is how the program will work. Resources will be provided to the Department of Health to establish a testing program for private wells. The Department of Health will provide grants to local units of government and tribal governments to provide testing to well users. Education, promotion, and outreach will be a part of the program. And local units of government may contract with others to carry out the testing if they choose. The testing will be voluntary and it will be free to those who use private wells. Assistance will be a part of the program too. The bill also provides resources to help owners or renters with contaminated wells to resolve contamination issues. Well users with annual family income of under $100,000 can then apply for a grant that will pay up to 75% of the costs of the remediation, and the grant amount will not be greater than $10,000. Remediation will explore point of entry treatment first, which means that the least expensive solutions for remedying the contamination will be explored first, and more expensive options will be explored next. There will also be reporting as part of the program to gather statewide data on contaminants being found and progress towards addressing those contaminants. So that's a brief overview of the bill. There are a few testifiers with me today. And the first testifier I'll turn to is Jeff Hill of the Minnesota Water Quality Association.
Okay, we do have three people. Thank you, Representative Lippert. We do have three people who signed up to testify. I would just ask testifiers to keep their comments to 2 or 3 minutes so we have time for member discussion as well. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Hill. Please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Chairman Freiberg and members of the committee. Thanks for the opportunity to testify today. My name is Jeffrey Hill. I'm Chair of Legislative Affairs for the Minnesota Water Quality Association. have a BA in chemistry from Southwest Minnesota State University, and I've been in water treatment for 45 years. Our association is comprised of licensed water treatment professionals throughout Minnesota who work to ensure that your drinking water is aesthetically pleasant as well as safe to drink. First, I'd like to thank Representative Lippert for his leadership on crafting House File 1806, the Minnesota Private Residential Well Testing and Remediation Act. This bill addresses important public health issues and levels the playing field for Minnesotans that access drinking water via a private well, and that's 1.2 million of us. No matter where Minnesotans live, they deserve to know that the water their family drinks is safe and free of contaminants. As you know, water in municipal systems is tested and treated before it reaches your tap. But if you live outside of a municipal system, you're left to your own devices to know that the water your family drinks is safe and free of contaminants. Our members are in many of the homes that we're talking about. We're removing hardness, iron and manganese, and tastes and odors. Seldom, however, are homeowners able to afford the testing necessary to check for nitrate, arsenic, bacteria, and hidden compounds. Not having a path to follow to improve their water, many, it seems to us, prefer not to know. This bill provides a path for homeowners to take control. And I might add, it provides a path for our members to assist the Minnesota Department of Health in educating people on water. By the way, the well drilling and servicing people are also on this team, and the Minnesota Water Well Association has asked me to convey that they're wholly in support of this bill. Now, our members do nitrate and arsenic treatment for restaurants, bars, churches, and other small water systems in outstate Minnesota. And we do this in the same neighborhoods and in the same water as the homes that we're talking about. And that's because the Minnesota Department of Health does their testing and reviews our treatment approaches for these systems, but not on homes. So we have a pretty good feel on what's not being done today. Now, the treatment technologies out there are proven and reliable. The Federal Safe Drinking Water Act, passed by Congress in 1974, defines safe water and mandates it, that is, if you're in a group of 25 people or more. The Minnesota Water Quality Association would like to assist Minnesota to meet those standards in all homes. Now, this voluntary testing and remediation program is a good approach to a complex issue. It offers Minnesotans the opportunity to learn about their water and how they might resolve these issues. It's a significant step in bringing clean water to everyone. Thanks again for the opportunity to testify in support of House File 1806. And thanks to Representative Lippert for his leadership on this public health issue.
Thank you, Mr. Hill. I also have Nels Paulson, who is signed up to testify. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Paulson. Please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, members. My name is Nels Paulson, and I'm pleased to be here on behalf of all the members of Conservation Minnesota. I'm the policy director at Conservation Minnesota, and we advocate for the funding and the policies at the state capitol that help every Minnesotan and every Minnesota community enjoy clean air, the great outdoors, and clean water. Our organization thanks Representative Lippert for authoring House File 1806 and shedding some light on the issue of contaminated private drinking water wells. The Minnesota Department of Health estimates 1.2 million Minnesotans get their drinking water each day from a private well. There are a number of contaminants that can be concerning in private wells. Some of those contaminants are caused by the natural geology of an area, like arsenic. Other contaminants are caused by human activity, like PFAS or nitrate contamination. The Minnesota Department of Agriculture has gotten a reasonable start on identifying vulnerable areas of the state where nitrate pollution is most likely. MDA's Township Testing Program helped inform the recent groundwater protection rule that was discussed at the legislature and eventually implemented by MDA in 2019. I'd like to point out the Township Testing Program was not able to sample all private wells for nitrate, so we're glad House File 1806 expands testing opportunities across the state. Also, the Township Testing Program first focused solely on nitrate testing, and as this committee has heard, there are a number of contaminants we should be concerned about in private well water. Another strong benefit of House File 1806 is that it provides immediate grant availability for private wells where a contaminant or contaminants are detected. It has been a longstanding goal of Conservation Minnesota that every Minnesotan and every Minnesota community have affordable access to safe drinking water in their homes and in their communities. And one of our concurrent goals is that the causes of contamination in private drinking wells be better addressed with broad state policies to improve crop fertilizer utilization, improve land use practices, and to reach a point where all private wells are no longer contaminated by human activity on the land. I would encourage committee members to ask Representative Lippert about the other bills he has signed on to help improve agricultural conservation practices across Minnesota. Simply stated, the goals of House File 1806 are first to provide widespread testing, and second, to provide assistance to address contaminated drinking water in private wells. And we urge you to support this bill. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Paulson. Finally, I have Jeff Broberg on the list of testifiers. Welcome to the committee. Once again, Mr. Broberg, please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Lippert and members for bringing this forward today in your committee. This is an important step forward, and we're all in support of an approach and just even like the name of Minnesota Private Residential Well Testing and Remediation Act. If we can get to the point of addressing the whole scheme of sampling, testing, treatment, we can create safety for rural Minnesotans. We don't know right now if people's wells are safe. And like I told you in the testimony last week, we've been putting on well testing clinics and find about 80% of the people that we have screened for nitrates have safe water. Of those that don't, it's a dilemma because there's a cost and a lot of different options. And I really appreciate the testimony of Mr. Hill, because the treatment options should not be a scary consequence for people. They're affordable, widely available, with a really deep level of understanding in that industry on how to help people at home. They often fear coming forward, though, and a program like this really puts private well owners on a safety standard similar to those people in cities, because they would have the testing available and means to get the treatment done in their home. The bill would go through a rules process to define a lot of the details, but many of them are well laid out here on how you make applications, grant awards, to the money that goes to local government units. Has a lot of really well thought out elements, we think, to move this forward. You'll note that it's in line with the bill I talked about last week, House File 3006 and 3003. It's not duplicative of those. With 3006, the plan was to expedite the well testing programs across the state with partnerships between the Department of Health, Water Resource Center, and the many nonprofits and citizen groups who can put that word out across the state. This bill would pay for the elements of certified lab testing and really good options for water treatment. So again, thank you, Representative Lippert and Mr. Chair for representing this. I think this is the year that Minnesotans with private wells will no longer be seen as kind of second-class citizens. That will be raised to the top once again with the safety of our water for things that oftentimes aren't in our control and can be confounding. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Broberg. That concludes the list of people who signed up to testify, and we'll turn to member discussion. Representative Ackland.
Thank you, Chair Freiberg. I have a question for a short question, and then maybe one for Mr. Hill and maybe one for either Representative Lippert or Mr. Paulson. So, Mr. Hill, you mentioned that you feel like the cost of testing may be a barrier to having your wells tested. Can you tell me what the average cost of testing is?
Mr. Hill.
I would think you're in the $100 range. There's not a mechanism now or a market there for good sampling in the home. And I think this bill brings the industry in so that they might do that at a relatively low charge. You can take your samples into a laboratory, although there's a problem there with people understanding how to sample for them, but you can take them into a laboratory and get specific things tested if you know what to look for at about $100 range, I would think.
Representative Ackland.
Thank you. Thank you for your answer. That sort of leads to the next question that I had. So in the bill under section 3, subdivision 4, it talks, gives the definition of contaminated. It's looking for substances in excess of the maximum contaminant level. So I looked into, I tried to look in these codes that were listed here. They're hundreds of pages. So my question is, can you tell me the exact citation in the code to which this is referring in terms of contaminants?
Thank you, Representative Ackland. I do see the citation in the text of the bill. Representative Lippert or one of your, would you like to take this?
Maybe someone from the Department of Health or one of the other testifiers might be able to speak.
Sure, I see. Better than me. Thank you. Mr. Hill, looks like you raised your hand.
Yeah, Mr. Chair and Representative Ackland, I think your question is about what are the standards on the well water? And if that's the case, the primary ones we look to are the MCLs, the MCLGs, easily found on the US EPA website. Minnesota does tweak those a little for some situations, but they are the important ones for the two that we're mainly talking about, arsenic and nitrate. The difference between those two, by the way, is that the MCL is primarily, it takes into account the financing and what we'd like to be. MCLG is where it really is safe to drink, fully 100% safe over a long time.
Representative Ackland, would you like additional information?
No, that was helpful. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Ms. Chair. I just for his concern about clean water. We all want everyone to have access to clean water. That's not debatable, I think. But one of the things, I did serve on a subcommittee of clean water a couple sessions ago, and with the Met Council, and there were a number of other representatives there. And one of the things that came out consistently is that, I think it was the MPCA, does have lower requirements as far as contamination than what the federal law requires. And of course, even some Democrat representatives voiced a concern about this in terms of the cost to their district and why we weren't using the federal requirements as far as contamination versus producing a lower requirement. I also had some concerns about this in other areas since then, as far as my district's concerned. So could somebody answer, either Representative Lippert or one of the testifiers, does this bill use the federal standard for contamination, or is it lower than the federal level for contamination of water?
Representative Lippert, would you like to take it, or hand it to a testifier?
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I see Mr. Hill raising his hand. It looks to me in the legislation like it's going to be relying on Minnesota law, but I'll turn to Mr. Hill.
Mr. Hill, you're muted, Mr. Hill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Grunhagen. In the case of Minnesota law will obviously be the one that we use. And there are a few cases where Minnesota does define lower limits. But I've been looking at this bill for a long time, and I think that in the we're going to follow the federal standards. Minnesota does not deviate lower on arsenic and nitrate. And while there might be some nuance to some contaminant where they are lower, I think the federal standards will apply here.
Okay. Representative Grunhagen?
Yeah, just one other quick follow-up. Representative Lippert, do you have any concern regarding, the programs being paid 100% for property owners? I know there's a income limit, 100,000 and under, versus having them have some skin in the game at all.
Representative Lippert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Grunhagen. So the structure of the program is to pay 75% of the costs. So it's a $10,000 limit, grant limit, but those who qualify would be eligible to a 75% discount on the cost that they face.
Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you. That's the last question I had right now. Thank you.
All right. Don't see any. Representative Heintzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm trying to look through, and I've been listening, but I might have missed it. Representative Lippert, is this a general fund expense? Is that what I'm seeing, or is this something that's going back to local municipalities? And maybe Glenn had already touched on it, but just wanted to reiterate, or not reiterate, but make sure I understand that correctly.
Representative Lippert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, it's a general fund expense.
Mr. Chair. Heintzman?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just going to point out that we have a number of funding mechanisms that are dedicated to clean water in Minnesota. Specifically, the Legacy Amendment is targeting dollars to the tune of hundreds of millions towards clean water in Minnesota. And I'm sure Mr. Hill knows this and Mr. Broberg knows this, especially Mr. Broberg. Mr. Broberg has served on the LCCMR, a whole nother funding mechanism with between 60 and 60 plus million dollars every year for issues related to water and environment natural resource issues. And I've seen lots of program requests come through the LCCMR, always support them, because we absolutely agree, doesn't matter which side of the aisle, that we want people to be able to access clean water and consistently. So testing is necessary and periodic testing, and it does cost something, but we in Minnesota are better equipped probably than any other state in the country in terms of the funding mechanisms available for these kinds of programs. And I just want to point out that year after year, I'm seeing this kind of legislation come forward, and it's always out of the general fund, or typically out of the general fund, when we have numerous other opportunities to find revenues that are already dedicated to that kind of work. And while sitting on the Clean Water Council and the Subcommittee on Water and the Environment Natural Resource Committee, those are things that we always support. And I hope that if this isn't successful coming through this process with general fund costs, I hope that you would consider working with the folks that are supporting this bill, maybe Mr. Hill, for example, and Mr. Broberg again, to make sure that it gets into the process at the LCCMR. And it does take time. Usually it's a year in advance to get these project recommendations moving. For a lot of these organizations, they have the process down because it's typical and common. And I'm not totally sure why, we keep looking at general fund, but if it isn't successful, that seems like it would be an opportunity for an outcome that could have a very positive impact and get something like this going, because it's just really hard sometimes to get general fund support when people know in the back of their mind we do have some really good other alternatives in terms of trying to find ways to pay for it that are already exist in Minnesota. That's it. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Heintzman. Representative Pryor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Lippert, for bringing this bill to the Preventive Health Committee, where it truly belongs. We are talking about drinking water. Water that comes into an individual's home is consumed by every member of that family. And to know that there's people out there that have private wells that may not know the quality of their drinking water, water they're giving to their children, water they're mixing with formula. So we understand the consequences of what's happening here if we don't assist these private well owners. And so I understand that there's no debate about that. So great to be having the discussion and to have an actual solution moving forward. My question at this point is, you know, how far will this particular bill and this particular vehicle go towards solving the problem across the whole state? Because we don't want to leave anybody out at this point. Everybody deserves clean water coming into their home. Are we chipping away at this, or is this going to be a comprehensive solution for people in the state?
Representative Lippert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Pryor, for those comments, both the concern for safe drinking water, making sure we're looping in 1.2 million Minnesotans who rely on private wells, and wanting to address the challenge. This is a big step forward. So Minnesota's needed this sort of comprehensive testing program. And we want to fund it so that the Minnesota Department of Health is truly able to oversee this part of their jurisdiction, which has been difficult for the agency to do. So we want to make sure we fund it. It's appropriate for it to be general fund. That's where it fits. We want the agency to be able to do this work long term, and so we need these dedicated funds coming out of the general fund. But yes, this is this bill is very significant. This will help us make sure that everyone in Minnesota has safe water to drink.
Okay, thank you, Representative Pryor. Okay, I don't have any additional members with their hands raised. So seeing none, Representative Lippert, any closing remarks?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, committee members, for the discussion. So I represent many residents who rely on private wells, and I'm excited for this bill to come forward. I'm also someone who rented a house in the country for a while when I had young children. And looking back, I didn't have anyone that was telling me we needed to get our water tested and make sure it was safe. And I shudder to think about what may have been in our water, and I just wasn't thinking about it. So we need to make sure that rural residents are aware that they should be testing their water and have the opportunity to do that. And this comprehensive approach will make sure that every Minnesotan has access to clean and safe drinking water.
Thank you, Representative Lippert. So hearing no further discussion, I renew my motion that House File 1806, as amended, be recommended to be re-referred to the Health, Finance, and Policy Committee. The clerk will take the roll.
Chair Freiberg.
Yes.
Freiberg, aye. Vice Chair Bierman.
Aye.
Bierman, aye. Representative Grunhagen.
No.
Grunhagen, nay. Representative Akam.
Akam, aye.
Akam, aye. Representative Abaje.
Aye.
Abaje, aye. Representative Ackland.
Ackland, aye.
Ackland, aye. Representative Carlson.
Carlson, aye.
Carlson, aye. Representative Franzen.
Franzen, aye.
Franzen, aye. Representative Heintzman.
No.
Heintzman, nay. Representative Morrison.
Morrison, aye.
Morrison, aye. Representative Pryor.
Aye.
Pryor, aye. Chair, you have 9 ayes and 2 nays.
Thank you. So there being 9 ayes and 2 nays, the motion prevails and House File 1806, as amended, is recommended to be re-referred to the Health, Finance, and Policy Committee. So there is no further business before this committee. I see no hands raised. So with that, I will adjourn the meeting. Thank you for your time.